National Gallery Podcast.
Hello, I'm Miranda Hinckley and this is the National Gallery Podcast. In this month's episode, Globetrotting with St George, we discover the international side of England's patron saint with a little help from Tintoretto. And
what it looks like to me is the kind of ship you struggle to remember from some other time in your life, such as sleep, such as a time in the past, such as childhood.
Novelist Russell Kellin Jones on the final journey of the Fighting Temeraire. But we start today with a subject that's had a greater influence on Western culture than perhaps any other. Take a walk around the gallery and it soon becomes clear that the history of art is inextricably bound up with the history of religion, and with one story in particular. Masterpiece after masterpiece in the collection is devoted to the life of Christ. And this Easter time, we've brought those works together in an audio tour specifically devoted to religious art. Leah Caribbean talked to curator Dawson Carr to find out more.
The Life of Christ trail includes some of the National Gallery's greatest masterpieces, and listening to it made me wonder, why is it that this particular sacred story inspired such a huge array of wonderful art?
Well, of course, Christianity is the greatest single force in European history. The belief in Christ generated the most awesome art that has been produced and exists in the National Gallery for this reason.
The story itself, which, I mean, is an extraordinary story that takes us from this humble birth through all the events of his life and his teachings, each of which are stories within stories. Often he's talking in parables, and then the events of his death and the resurrection. I mean, the story itself seems to provide artists with such a huge array of subject matter.
There's not a greater story in existence. Not even the tales of mythology are greater than this story. And of course, the artists as well were believers, and this was very much an expression of their faith.
And would you say that it was a spur to creativity? I mean, even experimentation among artists. And I'm thinking here about one of the works that appears on the trail, El Greco's Christ driving the traders from the temple, which by any account is an extraordinary picture. I mean, to me, it looks so modern.
Well, and of course, this story is truly exceptional in the life of Christ. This is a very untypical moment. This was the man of nonviolence, and here we see him being violent on arriving at the temple and finding it desecrated by commerce. And he takes his belt and he makes it into a flail and he drives them out of the temple. And in this work, El Greco has thought about this subject over the course of his career. He returned to the subject again and again and again. And by the time he gets to this late phase in his career, he really understands it. And he understands its meaning, its bigger meaning than just the event. It was often interpreted as the cleansing of the soul, of sin. And so here you see the composition divided in half, spinning around the figure of Christ. On the left-hand side, the traders are all in a jumble. And on the right-hand side, much more calm, are the righteous, who simply sit and comment on the event.
And this is painted around 1600, so that's the beginning of the 17th century. And what sort of function would this picture originally have served? What would it have been made for? Do we know?
We don't know in this case, but because he returned to this composition again and again, we doubt that it was created for any sort of liturgical purpose. This was really the creation of a gallery picture, a picture meant to be viewed much as pictures are viewed in the National Gallery today, hung in a picture gallery, hung in a house as a work of art, but a work of art that compels those who look at it to think about this subject, think about the deeper meaning and how the artist has brought that to be.
And do you see people in the National Gallery, visitors today, still looking at these works in that sort of way?
Absolutely. You do definitely see people wrapped in front of pictures like this, trying to figure it out. This isn't something that's easy, something that is gained with an initial impression. The language of art speaks to those who are willing to stand and look and really analyze what an artist has done and why.
But from a devotional point of view, there are some pictures here in the gallery that are still operating, aren't they, as devotional pictures?
Indeed.
There's one in particular that you've seen people in front of?
Yes, there is one painting in my part of the collection that I've seen people standing in front of and saying prayers before any number of times, and that's Sassoferrato's Madonna. And she's isolated against a dark background. She is prayerful herself, and she leads people to prayer still.
Still, so are they kneeling, or are they just...
No, standing? Not kneeling, but just standing in front of the work with their heads bowed and clearly saying a little prayer.
And a picture like that, would you ever take it down or move it?
I've only done it once in my time at the gallery, and I started getting telephone calls immediately asking where it is. In the Italian 17th century, we have a number of very great works, and I tend to keep them rotated, but I don't take that one down now.
So Sassoferrato's version staying in
absolutely.
Place.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Dawson.
Dawson Carr talking to Leah Caribbean. If you're visiting the National Gallery this month and would like to take the Life of Christ trail, it's available from audio guide desks and features former gallery director Neil McGregor. And you can also download an excerpt as a bonus track with this episode of the podcast. Next to News of Friday Lates, our new series of evening events. The gallery is now open until 9 p.m. on Fridays, and if you come along after work, you can enjoy the paintings with a glass of wine from the bar and take in an event for free. The programme includes live music, drawing classes and lectures, as well as a series of talks by novelists about their favourite works. By way of a taster, I caught up with one of the first speakers, the writer Russell Kellin Jones, shortly before his session on one of the best-known works in the gallery. Voted the greatest painting in Britain in a Radio 4 poll, Turner's The Fighting Temeraire portrays the end of a great warship as she's towed up the Thames at sunset. I asked Russell what fascinates him about the work.
What strikes me about the painting is the notion of ships having memory. Now, this is quite different to ships representing men's memory, men who've travelled on the ship, who've even died or fought on the ship. I'm talking about the hulk itself having a memory of some kind that the artist has to interpret for us in the form of colour and the form of brushstrokes. The Temeraire was sold out of the Navy to John Beatson, who paid £5,000 for the ship and then towed it up from its permanent home to Rotherhithe, where he had his breaker's yard. And the ship had had a glorious military past at the Battle of Trafalgar. And at the time, two ships were trying to board and destroy Nelson's flagship, the Victory. And the Temeraire was there and managed to board both of these ships and take them as prizes. So in a sense, the Temeraire is accredited with saving Nelson's ship from being taken over and possibly therefore swung the tide of the war. So as far as the painter was concerned, this ship had a heroic past, and he mourned to some extent it being brought up and to the knacker's yard, you know, to be brought up for its timber. It constituted 5,000 oak trees, and that was the value of the ship to John Beatson. What Turner does is transfer the story of the ship, the memory of the ship, or the emotional experience onto the landscape. So if you look at Turner's painting and see this golden ship being tugged into London by a dark steamship, and of course the sunset and various other elements to the painting, it all adds up to an emotional memory of that ship. And the sunset is probably the crucial element to that painting, you know, the blood red sunset that seems to be suggesting the ending of an era and the beginning of a new one in the new moon, of course. The color of the ship is the color of dreams. It's the color of the other world. There's a line of poetry that begins, "The sea is the beginning of another world," and that is, in a sense, what the ship represents, that it travels on that other world. So the spectral color of the ship, I think, suggests to me its memory of death, not just its own death, but hundreds of men have died on that ship in the middle of a battle, probably. Because it has to be remembered, it's a military ship, it's not a civilian cargo ship. And what it looks like to me is the kind of ship you struggle to remember. from some other time in your life, such as sleep, such as a time in the past, such as childhood. It reminds me of ships that travel in the night that are lit up like cathedrals, really, in the middle of the night. There's something about the painting that is not just about a ship. There's something going on, and even if you don't know the biographical information, you will feel, I think, something about that painting which will be stirring up in you a sort of history. It might be for an age gone by, it might be for your own youth, but something about the painting triggers emotions of all kinds in the viewer.
Thanks to Russell Kellin-Jones. If you'd like to see Turner's The Fighting Temeraire for yourself, with a glass of wine in hand, come along to a Friday Late. There's a bar as well as free tours, talks and music every week, and throughout this month and next, you can also visit the Picasso exhibition. For tickets to the show or more details about the free events, visit the website at www.nationalgallery.org.uk. A dragon, a damsel and a sword-wielding saint. The story of St George is one of our archetypal national myths, the essence of that slippery concept, Englishness. On Friday, the 23rd of April, the saint's emblem, a red cross on a white background, will fly from flagpoles around the country, and events will take place in the gallery to mark the day. I spoke to organiser Carly Allen to find out what she's got planned, and discovered there's more to England's patron saint than an aversion to fire-breathing reptiles. With St George's Day coming up on the 23rd of April, I've come to have a look at a painting by Tintoretto called St George and the Dragon, and I'm joined by Carly Allen. Carly, tell me a bit about this story. I mean, we think we all know it very well, St George, he kills a dragon, but what do we see here?
Well, in many respects, the story is instantly recognisable. We do feel that we know this tale of St George and the dragon. We see them in the centre of the painting. St George is the brave knight in shining armour. He's mounted on a white horse, and he's frozen in this act of challenging and subduing the ferocious dragon. The dragon bares its teeth. It has a long, vicious-looking tongue, and its claws are embedded in the seashore. This story of St George and the Dragon is so well known that many people just can't remember when they first heard it or a version of it. It's really embedded in our cultural back catalogue, if you like. And I think it's fascinating to think about how we approach a painting like this of St George and the Dragon. What do we bring to it ourselves, and what does it mean to us in a modern, diverse society?
I mean, to us, perhaps this looks like a fairly straightforward story about good winning out over evil and the dragon sort of symbolising wickedness and St George coming in and saving the princess and defeating evil. But what's actually going on?
I think it's possible to look at this painting in many different ways, and of course around celebrations for St George's Day it becomes a representation of that very English story, that for many people St George is an icon of Englishness, and of course he's really wrapped up in ideas of national identity, national pride, so that traditionally people have wanted to be associated with even his saint's day, the 23rd of April. It's often noted that Shakespeare, that great English icon, died on the 23rd of April, and Turner, the patriotic English painter, wanted people to think he was born on St George's Day, although that may have been a figment of his imagination. And of course, the English flag, the red cross on the white background, is the St George cross. So while for many people it symbolises England, I think it's important to remember that St George himself wasn't English. He was a Roman soldier. He was born in an area which is now in modern-day Turkey, and most of his stories are linked to sites in the Middle East. So the cult of St George originated in the Eastern Mediterranean and then spread out across the world. Today, St George is the patron saint of Catalonia, Portugal, Greece, Russia, Brazil, Ethiopia, among many other countries, as well as England. So he truly is an international symbol for many people. In the gallery on St George's Day, 23rd of April, we're going to try and combine some of these different elements to explore the myth and legends connected to St. George, so that after a short talk at 4 o'clock on the painting by Tintoretto, visitors can enjoy an impromptu performance given by a travelling theatre group, Suffolk Howlers. It's a traditional mummer's play, which is performed across the country at different sites on St. George's Day and includes the figure of St. George and one of the ways that he rises again during his martyrdom, so that in this secular tradition, George becomes much more than the hero on horseback. He actually represents the defeat of darkness, of winter, and it's significant that he is a symbol of renewal at this celebration of springtime. So it's interesting how this then affects our experience of the painting in the gallery, in the secularized environment of the National Gallery, where I think we can now enjoy that layering of many different meanings, that as well as bringing our own personal experience to it, for us these notions can exist side by side, so that George is simultaneously the chivalrous knight, he's the romantic hero, he's a focus for national pride, but he's also an international patron saint of many different countries. And so when we stand in front of it, I think we're responding to that very universal appeal of St. George slaying the dragon, whatever that dragon might be.
So we invite you all to come back on April the 23rd, have a look at the painting and enjoy the Mummer's Play. Carly, thank you very much.
That was Carly Allen. If you'd like to celebrate St. George's Day in traditional style, the Suffolk Howlers will be performing their Mummer's Play at 4 p.m. on the 23rd of April. You'll find them in front of Tintoretto's painting, which will also be the subject of a free lunchtime talk. And throughout the day, there'll be events outside in Trafalgar Square. For more details about the St. George's Day lineup or any of April's events, visit www.nationalgallery.org.uk. And don't forget, there's still time to visit Picasso Challenging the Past, which runs until early June. Exhibition tickets are available from the gallery or online with a booking fee. That's it for this episode. Until next time, goodbye.